Yeah. In a few minutes, I'll blow in a little bit and make sure it's okay. You know, it's an old horn, so you have to baby it along sometime because it's a real old horn. So, and it's not.
Michael Holt sits at a small black table at the front of the house. He leans back into the cushioned seat. A ginger ale he's barely touched sweats onto a white napkin. It's Tuesday night at Little Tokyo's Second Street Jazz Club in downtown LA. Holt's been waiting for about 2 hours for his chance to take the stage for open mic with the house band. Holt hasn't practiced with the band, so he has to fall back on a song he thinks they'll know.
No, we'll kind of wing it, I guess. Something like blues or a ballad or something. I like Misty kind of start off. Maybe I'll do Misty or something like that.
Holt plays alto and tenor sax and wants to find a band that will play smooth jazz with him. Holt's fallen behind other musicians trying to make their mark on the LA jazz scene. He was out of it for a very long time, an absence marked by crack addiction and prison time.
And there was a time when I got addicted, you know, it took all the music, took everything away, you know.
Yeah. Back at his sixth floor apartment, Holt settles into his couch. The apartment was given to him by the Skid Row Housing Trust, a homeless housing program. He reflects on a time when silence reigned.
For years, I didn't hear no music in my head. When I was addicted, I didn't hear nothing.
For a time, all Holt heard was silence. In prison, Holt was invited to take care of the chapel. He had a religious awakening, becoming alienated from the gangs and street life ways, and some of his fellow inmates didn't like the changes he was making, especially his cleaning up their secret hiding spot, the chapel.
They was gonna kill him because I took all that dope, the knives he hid up under and put in bags. You couldn't go back in there, you homosexual couldn't go back there no more. No more fighting in the hallway, you know what I mean? No more doing drugs over here. And they didn't like it. And boy, almost lost my life, you know what I mean?
Holt didn't move when the gang showed him the knife they were going to kill him with. Then, remarkably, their leader let him go. It was a sign to him that he was going to survive. With his faith steadying him, Holt started to think about music again. He'd often remember his mother and the sacrifices she'd made so he could play.
When I was a kid, my mom took an extra job to supply money for the music lessons. I went to Los Angeles Conservatory of Music. She worked a job out here at the Bird's Eye Food, and she would work quite a few hours overtime. She'd get off, go home, and come home, and she'd get a little sleep, eat a little bit, and she'd gone again off to another job, you know what I mean? And one time I went out there with her where she was working, cleaning people's homes and stuff, washing, you know, and all that stuff. You know, I said, boy, you know, I'll quit those lessons because I don't want you to work like this, you know. But she said, no. You know what I mean? Go and take your lessons. And so I did.
Holt's music had been his way of paying tribute to his mother. He felt he couldn't honor her without it. But then, a turning point at CMC, a California state prison in San Luis Obispo.
When I got to CMC, they had a music program. And they had a bunch of instruments, but they were raggedy. You know what I mean? In real bad shape. One day I'm out on the yard and I get a call over the loudspeaker, you know, to report to the chaplain.
One of the chaplains had a surprise for Holt.
And he had a brand new alto saxophone for me, you know, sitting there, you know, and I said, oh man. And so that opened the door for music, you know what I mean, to come back. And it was like I had never stopped playing. It woke up that creative sense inside of me. It woke it up again. I started hearing music again.
Holt was transferred to another California prison, where they told him having a saxophone was too dangerous.
They were scared I could take out the rods and stab somebody, you know, all kind of old dumb stuff.
So Holt poured himself into playing the guitar and even started writing songs.
I was standing upon a corner, watching people walk by. Something about their faces just puzzled me, so I had to stop, ask myself why. I've written them on walls, you know what I mean? I have to get it out, and the idea out real quick. And the only place I had no paper, I had a pen. And I went right to the wall and got it up there. And I got me some paper and took it off the wall and cleaned the wall off. You know, that's just how it is, you know.
This and that, both big and small, they're just stacked everywhere you go. Looking on them sad faces, broke my heart, tears filled my eyes.
After more than a decade in maximum security prison, the time finally came in 2010 for Holt to walk free.
Missing in the life.
Usually I go and get loaded, you know, get a woman, get loaded and all that kind of crazy stuff. But this time, I took that money and I went downtown and I went all over the place looking for horns.
Michael Holt walked up and down the streets of Skid Row searching. He went in a pawn shop that was just like where he'd first sacrificed his saxophone for drug money years ago.
I went in this one and I asked him about that horn there and he says, oh, I guess about 300, you know, and I tried it. Need a little work on it, you know, but it fit my budget, you know, so I took it, I bought it, I still play it, you know.
Going to the pawn shop brought up painful memories for Michael Holt, of a time when he'd walked in with a saxophone and left empty-handed. He'd sold his instruments for crack when he was in the thick of his addiction.
It hurt, you know, because I would pawn them, and I said, oh, I'll go back and get them out, but I never did, you know what I mean? And I ended up all my equipment gone, and house gone, cars, motorcycles. I had a Corvette, and it went, my motorcycle, everything went behind that stuff. I lost it all, lost my job. There was Selma, a B-flat tenor Selma. It was worth about $6,000, and I think I sold it for about $300.
This time, Holt wasn't going to ever let go of his saxophone.
And I carried me a big knife. Yeah, because I had those horns and people was looking at them. You know, they came up, would come up on me. I tell them, don't come up on me, man. You know what I mean? Don't do this one. Let this be, you know what I mean? And they kind of got the idea. They kind of backed off. They were very important to me. It was like a lifeline to me, you know.
He still has the horn he bought that day.
I need a new horn. I need a new sax. That thing is held together by rubber bands, but I'm just patient, you know what I mean? God will bless me with old horn, new horn.
Back at the Second Street Jazz Club, Holt sees a guy who circulates at open mic nights, too.
Yeah. All right, how you doing?
Did you play yet? Did you blow yet?
No, not yet, no. But after the break. I just love music. And if you're really sincere about a thing, you won't give it up. You know what I mean? You'll pursue it, you know. And my passion is this horn. I may never get a Grammy. I never may not be make $1 million. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times I played, they didn't have no money to pay, you know. Or if they did, they just give you a little bit. But it's not about those things. At my age, at my stage of life now, it's just playing.
The house band is trickling back to the stage, and Michael Holt is testing his mouthpiece. He's first on the list for open mic. Finally, Holt's name is called. Dressed in all black, down to his cowboy boots, Holt consults with the pianist, who signals to the band. Holt holds tight to his pawn shop saxophone, closes his eyes, and he's off. Emily Frost, Annenberg Radio News.